So Russia faces new rounds of sanctions from both the United States and the European Union over its continued support for rebels in eastern Ukraine. In Washington, President Barack Obama said that if Russia continued on its current path, the costs would continue to grow. Meanwhile, almost 2 weeks after the shooting down of a Malaysian airliner over Ukraine, the EU reached agreement on its first broad economic sanctions against Moscow. Joining us are the Financial Times Brussels Bureau Chief Peter Spiegel and Chris Weaver, who's an economist with Macro Advisory Consultants in Moscow. Peter, to you first of all, what exactly has the EU now agreed?
Well, as he said, for the first time, they've gone from targeting individuals and companies, specific individuals, to broad economic sanctions against entire sectors of the Russian economy. And the three main sectors they focused on were the financial sector. So they went after basically every large state-owned Russian bank, which is a vast majority of the Russian banking system. They went after the energy sector by targeting a lot of the technologies that those companies need for sort of, you know, developing in deep water drilling, shale gas, some of these sort of high-end technologies that they're exploring. And lastly was the defense sector, so a blanket arms embargo with no retroactivity, very importantly. So existing contracts can go through, but in the future, no arms shipments to Russia. So for the first time, they're literally targeting entire sectors of the Russian economy.
A number of countries were seen as reluctant to impose further sanctions, and I know there was quite a spat last week between France and Britain. So has all of that changed?
It has to a certain extent. Now, again, the big spat between France and Britain was over this issue of retroactivity in the arms embargo. The French have a 1.2 billion euro contract to sell the Russian Navy these Mistral-class helicopter attack vessels. Now, this has been something that it's not only the Brits who have complained about this, the Swedes, the Poles, the Baltics. There are a lot of countries who have been very open about this. And actually, the Lithuanian president last night, after the sanctions were agreed, sort of went out publicly and said that she still thinks this is kind of shameful that the French are still shipping this vessel. What was happening in the negotiations was the insistence by the French and others that they have basically these carve-outs so that their domestic industry don't get hit too hard. There was similar narrowing of the energy sanctions. Originally, they were going after some of these gas technologies the Russians need for the gas industry. Obviously, the Germans and others need Russian gas for the domestic energy market, and was concerned about retaliation. So a lot of these things in the negotiations were scaled back. The only one that really wasn't, to be honest with you, and I know Britain's come under a lot of criticism for its failure to be more aggressive, but the financial sanctions did not really change. Britain, obviously, London being the financial center of Europe, that's the place that is going to take the most serious sanctions, because this Russian banking sanctions, I would argue, is the most significant one out there, the one that's going to have the biggest impact on Russia and potentially in London. So that was the negotiation that went over the course of last week. But at this point, those who were resistant, those who were reluctant, have signed on because they were able to get some concessions in the negotiations.
There was a question mark last night, I know, over whether one particular bank would be included, quite an important bank. Has it been included?
This, I think you're talking about Sberbank, which according to everyone I've talked to, is indeed included. The definition of the banks that the EU is going after are banks that are more than 50% owned by Russian government entities. And Sberbank is indeed more than 50% owned by Russian government entities. And I can tell you that was a topic of discussion because there are some, Sberbank has subsidiaries and branches in some European countries. So they were looking at ways to make sure that those subsidiaries weren't hit. But Sberbank, which is the largest Russian bank by far, when you judge by assets, is indeed be on the list. Oddly, the Americans came out with their own list last night. As you mentioned, President Obama came out the list, added new Russian banks, but Sberbank wasn't on it. So slightly odd. We're trying to figure out today why that was. But to be honest with you, for the first time since the Ukraine conflict started, we have the EU actually taking tougher measures than the U.S. The U.S. has not done really sectoral sanctions. They have continued to do, they did some bit on the energy industry. They continue on the financial side, at least, hitting individual banks as opposed to going to whole classes of financial institutions.
Chris Weaver, to bring you in on this, what's your assessment of what the EU announced last night?
Well, it's, as you say, this is certainly a significant step up in the attack against the economy for the first time. We do have this kind of direct impact on or potentially negative impact on the economic activity. What it basically will mean, and I'm focusing on the restrictions in the banking sector in particular, certainly the more serious short term, it means that the debt market in Russia is certainly going to tighten for companies, small, medium-sized enterprises in particular, for individuals. They're going to find it a lot more difficult to get access to new debt, and the cost of servicing existing debt is certainly going to rise as the market tightens. So that higher debt servicing cost on existing debt and it greater difficulty in accessing new debt is very likely going to have an impact on activity, on the consumer sector, on investment by industry, and that's what's going to pull down growth. We had GDP growth in Russia of 1.1% in the first half of the year, just about avoiding a recession. The IMF last week came out with a substantially revised downwards forecast for the full year of 0.2%. So they're looking for a significant retraction in the economy in the second half. That's still based on kind of almost the situation getting worse. The sanctions that we saw last night in the banking sector make life difficult, but they don't collapse the economy. The banks, for example, only have to refinance $20 billion of external debt between now and the end of the year. They should be able to get that from state resources, perhaps from some Asian banks. But it is the impact on the broader domestic debt market, and specifically the threat that now that we've moved into stage three sanctions, that any subsequent sanctions will be even will have more of a direct and negative impact on the economy.
Mind you, people might ask if there are any indications that any of the previous sanctions had any effect on Vladimir Putin and on his policies in Ukraine.
No, clearly not. And we certainly were surprised that we've moved to stage three sanctions at this now. We weren't expecting that. But, you know, the downing of the Malaysian aircraft and in particular the criticism of Russia's reaction in the aftermath of that tragedy, you know, has completely changed the picture, has changed the situation totally, particularly as regards to Europeans. As the previous speaker said, the Europeans have now taken over from the US as like more aggressive sanctions, and that's specifically down to the airline tragedy and their aftermath. So we have entered a new phase. Sanctions thus far have been what we would refer to as the inconvenient category, targeting individuals, targeting some companies that weren't that big in the economy. The game has completely changed as of last night.
Peter Spiegel, if these sanctions don't work and if there's no sign of a softening of Vladimir Putin's line, what then?
Well, they talked quite a bit. We got brief light last night by some of the officials that worked on these things. The code word is scalability. So it was quite a large options paper that went to all the ambassadors about last week, sort of 10 pages worth of options they had. They went for a sort of minimalist approach. Particularly on the financial sanctions, they just went after banks. It is certainly possible one of the options they looked at for potential in the future is go after all state-owned enterprises. So not just the financial sector, but other big Russian companies that are owned by the state. Other parts of the financial sector, sovereign bonds, for instance, you know, preventing Russia from selling its own debt, raising its own money on European markets. So there are other things they can do to try to ratchet up the pressure. But you raise a very good point, because not only has Russia thus far not reacted in ways that the Europeans and Americans have wanted, as a matter of fact, what we've seen Western intelligence agencies tell us is they've actually escalated. We've seen, you know, movement of far more heavy weaponry into Ukraine. We've seen, you know, much more intelligence showing that they are sort of doubling down, to coin a phrase, in eastern Ukraine. The question is, as this begins to hit the broader Russian economy, particularly the elites, let's remember, this is a country that over the last 20 years likes to see itself as a European country, particularly these elites who live in London, who ski in Austria, who go to the beach in Spain. I mean, they like to travel and participate in European life. If suddenly they find themselves barred from a lot of these activities, does that put pressure on the regime? There's a lot of... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you're okay. Listen, what we will do, though, is we'll leave it at that, because I know we have to go to another call on another line. But thank you very much indeed, both of you, for joining us. Peter Spiegel there of the Financial Times, and also Chris Weaver, who's an economist with Macro Advisory Consultants. They're based in Moscow.